Food and Drug Commissioner Dr. Margaret Hamburg will be stepping down this week. She's been on the job for nearly 6 years. The former New York City Public Health Commissioner has had an eventful career in Washington. The compounding pharmacy scare and passage of a major reform bill are just a couple of the big episodes. Ahead of her departure, I sat down with Dr. Hamburg to review her tenure at the agency and get some thoughts on where the agency should go in the future. She told me about the differences between running the FDA and her former position as Commissioner of New York City's Department of Health and Mental Hygiene.
There are a lot of similarities, but there are some really important differences. One is that the FDA is a much, much larger agency with a span of responsibilities that really boggles the mind. You know, it isn't obvious to everyone the full range of things that we're responsible for. And in fact, I didn't fully understand it until I took on the job and was sitting in the chair as commissioner of the FDA. But we actually regulate products that account for somewhere over 20 cents of every dollar that consumers spend on products in this country, and products that really matter to people, whether it's life-saving drugs or drugs that enable you to go to work every day and raise a family, or vaccines that prevent your children from getting serious diseases, or devices that enable you to get back on your feet and do things, or bionic eyes, who would have imagined, to the safety of the majority of the food supply, to oversight of cosmetics and dietary supplements, to things that emit radiation, like safety of your microwave, and most recently, the regulation and oversight of tobacco products. So it's a vast set of responsibilities and increasingly a global set of commodities that we oversee and industries that we work with, because the products that we regulate are coming in whole or in part from places all around the world. So, you know, not only are we having our fingers in all kinds of different issues and products, but we also now have to be working with countries around the world and literally several hundred thousand different facilities that are producing products or components of products that we're regulating. So the scope is just very different. But the coming together in terms of how is FDA like being health commissioner in New York City, the coming together of important issues of science, medicine, and public health with a broader array of issues, economic, legal, social, ethical, you know, have a lot of similarities. And also the fact that we've got such a broad range of stakeholders that we need to work with and engage with.
Now, FDA is one of those agencies that almost every decision it makes, somebody is thrilled with, somebody feels hurt by, or somebody criticizes. Did it surprise you the level of scrutiny and chorus commentary, let's put it that way, that occurs for every single thing that happens here?
Well, you make a good point. And certainly when I first took the job, a number of people said, don't you think you're crazy to take a job where the very definition of the job is that someone is always mad at you? But the truth is that one of the things I learned early in public service, you know, in particular when I became health commissioner in New York City at a fairly tender age as well, I might add, was that you can't expect that everyone will like you, but you have to hope that people will respect you and your integrity, that you have to have a clearly defined compass that you use to navigate complex landscapes. And certainly for the FDA, that has to be science. We're a science-based, evidence-driven regulatory agency with a public health mission, which is to promote and protect the health of the public. And, you know, I have found if I keep my eye on what is our mission and what are we trying to achieve and what is the data that can guide our decision-making, that even when people are unhappy with the decision, they feel that they had a fair hearing and can understand, you know, how the decision was made. And I think you have to be open as well. And really, one of the things I've been very proud of, and it's taken a lot of time, but it's something I think is absolutely essential, is being willing to listen, to learn, and to respond to the concerns and issues that people raise.
Now, you've had a pretty long tenure, actually, compared to a lot of FDA commissioners. What would you say is the accomplishment you're most proud of?
Big picture, what I'm really proud of is coming into an agency at a time when it was troubled, when there'd been a lot of issues and, you know, some would even say scandals in the drug area and the food area major food safety issue with contaminated peanut products, some visible drug recalls with media and congressional involvement and a lot of finger pointing. And, you know, there was a lot of sort of circling the wagons, people feeling embattled. And, you know, I think I was able to come on board. I was able to address some of the concerns about what FDA does, how we do it, and why, open us up through greater transparency, openness, and engagement with stakeholders, and hopefully reinvigorate, you know, the esprit de corps of many of the people that work here. And people should take pride in their work. On the big picture, I think, you know, that's one of the things I take great pride in, and really repositioning the agency for the challenges of today and of tomorrow, including, you know, really putting renewed emphasis on the importance of science within our walls and scientific collaboration with others, and responding to the challenges of globalization, which is changing the nature of our agency in such fundamental ways.
We're speaking with Dr. Margaret Hamburg. She is the commissioner of the Food and Drug Administration, at least for a little while longer. That whole idea of the internationalization that you mentioned a couple of times, with the possibility of a big Pacific trade agreement, that could really increase the mission a whole lot. How much of the commissioner's time is spent looking forward to see what might be coming down the pike that would impinge on the agency's mission?
Well, it's very important that the commissioner always be looking forward and anticipating future needs and opportunities, because it does take time to mobilize in response and to begin to steer, you know, the ship that is the FDA, to make sure that we're adequately resourced, to make sure that we actually have the authorities that we need to do our job, and to make sure that we are engaging with the right partners. So certainly in the issues that emerge from globalization, it has meant that we have really had to rethink the paradigm. And, you know, the old model that was first established in the early days of the FDA, where primarily a domestic agency looking and working inward and inspecting things as they came over our border, was one that just could not persist in the modern era. And both in terms of how we're organized now with offices overseas and lots more collaboration on a one-to-one basis with counterpart regulatory authorities, but also multilateral and working with international organizations. And actually, one of the things that I've spearheaded during my time here is to actually create a new global governance mechanism around the world to try to better share information and to collaborate around critical issues and to work together both on the oversight scientifically of the products that we're all responsible for, as well as ensuring the safety and integrity of these complex supply chains and the quality of products wherever they're made. It's a shared concern of all regulatory authorities, very much so for the United States, where we're seeing, you know, imports quadrupling over the last decade. But it's one where we can best do our job by working more closely with others. So,
and do you find that some of the nations that we might even be opposed to in other domains, that there's cooperation in the food safety area, despite what's going on at, say, the military or the economic level?
Well, it certainly is an area where it's vitally important to find ways to collaborate, and where even when there are differences in politics and alignments of two countries outside of the realm of FDA, we can find lots of ways to work together and maybe, in fact, strengthen the relationships between two nations or regions because of the positive collaborative work that emerges through what we're trying to do. It's in everybody's best interest to try to raise the quality of products. It's striking to me that increasingly products that we're getting in this country are coming from countries that are developing economies, certainly not as sophisticated in terms of their regulatory capacities, and in many cases, you know, less stable politically and economically. But by working together, we can actually strengthen their economic development, the quality of life for their people, because the product standards increase. And it has many, many benefits, including higher quality products for U.S. consumers as a result, but also greater safety and security by helping to strengthen these countries in some more fundamental ways.
As you prepare to leave office, what would you like to have done that's maybe still in that unfinished basket?
Well, there's always going to be more work to be done. And it was a hard decision about when to leave, because there are always a couple more things on the list. But I look back and I really feel that so much has been accomplished in key areas, and a lot is on track that I think will stay on track and, in fact, continue to gain momentum. One of the things that was important to me as I thought about stepping down was making sure that we had the right leadership team in place here, and I didn't want to leave until I had filled some critical roles. And I'm very, very pleased that we have some great new additions to our team on both the food area and the medical product area, and a lot of strong leaders who've been here for a while. So I feel very good about where the agency is right now. We need more resources. There is no doubt that the expectations of the public and of our Congress are very high on what FDA can deliver, and we get asked to do more and more at a time when both science is advancing at breakneck speed, and that affects the products we regulate and how we do it. And the world, as we've been talking about, is much more global, and that puts a set of you know, very challenging new demands on us. We really do need to get the support and the ability to recruit and retain the kinds of high-quality employees that make FDA such a very special and unique place.
Dr. Margaret Hamburg has been Food and Drug Commissioner for the last 6 years. She'll be leaving the agency at the end of the week. In part two of my interview with her, we discuss some of the challenging episodes during her tenure, such as the compounding pharmacy scare and debate over a surgical tool known as the morcellator. Dr. Hamburg also commented on a proposal to merge the FDA and agriculture food inspection components into a single agency.
Certainly, if you started to really move towards a single food agency, it would require a huge amount of reorganization and realignment, including of the legal regulatory framework, because USDA does its inspections and operates under a very different set of legal requirements than FDA. From my perspective, the critical thing is that we deliver on our promise to the American people to make the food supply as safe and high quality as possible. And right now we're involved in a very important transformational activity, which is implementing the Food Safety Modernization Act, which was passed, I think, back in 2011. And it really is the first major new legislation around food safety for the FDA in decades, and it's transforming our system from one that's reactive, waiting till a problem occurs and then scrambling to address it, to one that is preventive. And prevention is, you know, the critical pillar of public health.
Sure.
And we can help patients and families and communities. If we can prevent foodborne illness, we can save money in the healthcare system to the tune of some $78 billion or so, it's estimated, a year. And also, it benefits the food industry enormously. If we can prevent recalls that are costly to the company directly involved, but costly to all of the industry because it undermines trust and confidence in the safety of the food supply, that undermining of confidence can affect sales for a very long time. So we think we can make a huge difference, and we're not doing it in isolation. Very much a part of this transformation of food safety involves working in partnership with our counterparts at the Department of Agriculture, as well as at the state and local level of government, as well as internationally, because of the increasing internationalization of food supplies.
So it's not a matter of moving a few chess pieces around and everything looks neat.
Right, right. I think, you know, we can learn a lot as we implement the Food Safety Modernization Act about how to work more effectively together, which then can inform other decisions down the road.
I wanted to ask you about some specific events that have had a lot of publicity and really were big topics in the public health area, really in the public. One is the compounding issue that happened with that place in Massachusetts. What did the FDA learn from that? And what are the organizational or process lessons from something that was really horrifying while it was going on?
Yeah. Well, you know, sad to say, the incident with the contaminated steroid and the fungal meningitis outbreak that occurred a few years ago because of a particular compounding pharmacy, NECC, was not isolated in terms of problems with compounding pharmacies. It was by far the worst outbreak associated with a contaminated product. But this issue about the appropriate oversight of compounding pharmacies to ensure the quality of the product has been an issue for a very long time, with considerable uncertainty about the regulatory oversight framework. Compounding pharmacies are traditionally overseen at the state level, who licenses pharmacies. And, you know, many, many compounding pharmacies play a critical role in people's lives because they can produce for a patient at their physician's request with a prescription a particular pharmaceutical product that they need that they couldn't otherwise get. Maybe the medication they need only comes in pill form, but they have a swallowing problem, or they're a child and they can't swallow, or they have an allergic reaction to a certain component of a drug, and the compounding pharmacist can make it in a way that's safe for them to take. But over time, what was happening was that some compounding pharmacies were actually starting to behave more like manufacturers and creating, you know, products, sometimes complex products, sometimes products that needed to be prepared very carefully according to good manufacturing practices like sterile injectables, but they weren't being prepared with the right oversight, and they were being sold more broadly and not with a prescription for each patient at the request of a physician for their individual patient's needs. And because of various laws and legal decisions, it was unclear where some of the state authorities ended and FDA authorities began. The NECC crisis really shone a spotlight on some of this, and a new law was passed that better defined some of these issues. And, you know, we are very actively engaged in important aspects of compounding pharmacy oversight. A new category of what are called outsourcing facilities has been created, where people can sign up with us and actually be subject to a set of more stringent requirements in terms of good manufacturing practice for sterile injectables that are the highest risk products, and also with requirements for adverse event reporting. But these are the kinds of standards and practices that companies making these products should use. Ensures a higher level of quality for patients and for healthcare systems, and we think that this will make a big difference.
And the other one was the Morcellator, a medical device episode where it had been approved and then found to be maybe should not have been approved.
What we tried to do was, number one, learn more about the facts. And actually, we did our own research and realized that the concerns were present and, in fact, were somewhat worse than had been identified in some of the earlier studies. But we also identified that there were, for some women, benefits of this approach if it could be done right, in particular young women where you might preserve their fertility for the future.
My question there then is, how do you maintain the kind of organizational agility to make sure that you can make those fine-grained decisions, or whereas, you know, there might have been some people that made a decision early on, and sometimes people tend to stick by it no matter what?
Well, you know, I think the first challenge, which goes to the core of the work we do at the FDA, is finding the right balance of risks and benefits, because at the end of the day, nothing in life is without risks, but we want to make sure that the overall benefit to patients and consumers is clear and present. And sometimes that's a very hard process in and of itself, because it depends a little bit on your perspective and the context of what is the disease, what are the relative risks, and what are the relative benefits. So we're always working on refining that process and better defining it. But also, these are dynamic issues, and what we have to do is always be open-minded about changing decisions as more information comes in, and as in the case with the morcellation technique, doing some of our own research to better understand the nature and scope of the problem, and also how a particular medical intervention is working. And so it is a constant process, and we need to have a sort of a lifespan approach. Many people think that the FDA responsibility is really mainly in the pre-approval. And once we make a decision, yes or no, it goes into the marketplace. And then we only get involved if there's a serious life-threatening problem where it's a question of do we recall it from the market or not. But it's much more textured than that. And it really, number one, for us, we have to be involved deeply with systems of monitoring and oversight that go from the early development process through the approval process to its real-world use, where often you learn more about a medical product than you can possibly learn in study beforehand. And we have to always be collecting information and evaluating it and adapting our positions and recommendations accordingly.
A couple of quick questions. Does the FDA have the IT support that it needs to collect that data? Because you're getting into the era of big data.
We do sit on huge amounts of data, both the medical product and other product submissions that we get often have vast amounts of data. And then in the modern era, you know, the magnitude of data that we're getting from things as, you know, seemingly simple as genomic testing, you know, can really add up and burden even sophisticated IT systems. And then, of course, the expertise to do the analytics on this data is very challenging as well. One of the things we very much are trying to do, apart from building the capacity and expertise within FDA, and those efforts are going forward and I think, you know, holding a lot of promise and delivering results. And we have a big project called Open FDA that I think has been very successful. But in addition, we need to be able to draw on other existing data sources for information that underpins what we're doing. For example, in the post-market setting where we're monitoring for safety and also efficacy of products, you know, we need to rely on electronic health records to get important information, on information that's being collected as part of insurance data collection about procedures that have been done, what devices have been used, what drugs were given, and, you know, what were the treatment strategies.
And having been commissioner of FDA, are there any foods you won't touch anymore?
Well, it's dangerous in some ways for me to go there, but I certainly have a much renewed appreciation of the complexity of the food supply and the ways in which food can be either unintentionally subject to contamination or the risks that exist in terms of deliberate adulteration as well, either for economic gain, and sadly we have seen that with substitutions of food components because they're cheaper, but they may not actually be good for you or certainly not nutritious, but also the concern that, you know, as a form of terrorism, our food supply can be vulnerable.
But you'll still pick up an apple and eat it from a bodega on Third Avenue, for example?
Well, you know, I'm careful about street food, but I like to joke that, you know, I challenge my immune system on a regular basis.
And what are you doing next when you leave?
You know, I don't know what I'm doing next beyond getting some rest, enjoying, you know, friends and family, regrouping a little bit, and then, you know, really thinking about what comes next. This is a really demanding job. You're on call, you know, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, making hard decisions, as you noted earlier in our interview, taking a lot of flack as well. Enormously rewarding, and I love the fact that every day when I go home, I feel I've been doing things that really matter. But I look forward to a little downtime now.